Welcome to Compliance Perspectives. I'm Courtney Nordrum, your host from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and the Healthcare Compliance Association. I'm here today with Anna Weitz. Anna owns her own law office, the Anna Weitz Law Office, and Anna's here to talk about telehealth. But first, let's start with how you got interested in compliance and how you got into compliance in general.
Well, good question. I have worked in and around healthcare for my entire practice, 26 years or so. And about 6 or 7 years ago, started seeing the compliance focus that the government was beginning to audit people. We were seeing a lot more desk audits. We were seeing a lot more questions about medical necessity. And so I started reading more, started studying. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, particularly in Kentucky and in the South, we started seeing a lot more DOJ prosecutions, a lot more medical necessity questions. I work for several clinical labs, and we saw a lot of lab compliance questions. Mm-hmm. And it just became so fascinating that I tell my clients I haven't slept in 4 years because I can't take the time out from learning. And the more I learned about compliance, the more interesting the whole spectrum became. I started out just targeting on, okay, hospital compliance or lab compliance. And now just the entire system, particularly being here and getting to see so many different presenters, many of whom are not attorneys, mm-hmm. talk about their little piece or what they do to make their hospital, their clinic, their practice run better. It's I'll never sleep again. It's such a wonderful field. I'm just really enjoying learning the fact that one of the key pieces in healthcare particularly is compliance, and a lot of attorneys don't realize that.
So you're speaking, and you have a partner speaking, Nathaniel Lachtman. You're speaking on telehealth.
Yes.
What made you send a proposal to speak on that topic?
In Kentucky, we are, as the entire nation is, focusing on how to best leverage the healthcare dollar. And about 15 years ago, a wonderful state rep passed a telehealth bill mm-hmm. that basically said, in Kentucky, everyone gets paid, it's parity, everyone gets paid fair market value for telemedicine, just like for physical interaction. And the bill mostly just sat there, and no one used it. And then as we started really focusing on decreasing healthcare dollars 3 or 4 years ago, I worked with the legislature, and we started talking a lot more about how we could leverage that healthcare dollar, particularly in telepsych, and the three barriers to care, particularly in mental health care in a rural state, are access. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to get to your doctor, cost, it's very hard to afford, particularly low-income care, and stigma. I really thought about behavioral health, mental health, as being sort of, particularly addiction, and this is my bad bias, more of a low-income problem, an unemployed person problem. And the provider said, no, Anna, we don't have trouble. The Medicaid patients come in, our low-income patients really want to be heard. It's the doctors, lawyers, teachers, and engineers who don't want to access care, because if you're seen walking into the methadone clinic and you're somebody's pastor or doctor, you really can suffer. And telehealth seemed to be a natural way to hit all of the population in a cheaper, faster fashion. It's a lot easier, say the providers, to counsel 100 people via smartphone or PC than to try and get 100 people to come into your office and see you in smaller groups. I also really am fascinated by gadgets. My son's kind of an IT person, and so it was interesting to me seeing the difference in, like, Alaska, which will let you access telemedicine maybe on a smartphone or in your home, direct to consumer, direct to patient. And a state like Kentucky, which is spoken hub, so it's usually hospital to hospital, and trying to encourage Kentucky to go more to a direct to patient.
What do you see as the main or maybe the most standout challenges in telehealth and compliance?
The compliance issues, I thought going in would be the typical stark anti-kickback. Are you using this as a way to practice owner to also pad his bills or his invoices by referring to a telepsych provider who was also part of his practice? In reality, I don't actually see those occurring a lot. I'm seeing a lot of doctors billing for telehealth just like they were billing for their own practice, and it is themselves or an ancillary provider. It's the same with hospitals. A lot of the hospitals aren't even charging the facility fee they could. They're just letting the patients be there and access the remote care from their telehealth facility and not billing for that $25. The big compliance concerns I hear and address regularly are, is this device HIPAA compliant? Mm-hmm. What exactly is HIPAA compliant? Payers are worried that even if you have the software, which is really very affordable these days, it's not truly HIPAA compliant, and somebody could tap in and hear your psych discussion. I don't think that's necessarily a real fear. We bank on our phones. We live our entire lives on our phone.
We sure do.
Why don't we access medical care, particularly with some of the whiteboard apps or the apps you can have on your phone so it looks like the doctor's practice app. They don't realize you're using a third-party provider with better encryption. Storage questions or big compliance questions. What do we do with records? Do we record sessions or do we not record sessions? And if we record them, can they go in the cloud? How long do we have to keep them? One of the best questions at the session this morning was, what about when you're treating a child? If you're recording and archiving those sessions, are you going to keep those for 28 years or 18 years or however long it takes for that child to reach majority and then go through the period of time before they can sue you? So it's very practical, nuts and bolts type compliance questions.
What do you see from the outside looking in compliance programs doing to keep up with the evolving landscape of telehealth and mobile health in general?
I'm seeing a lot more attention paid to the paper that goes into it, the patient-informed consent, reading your payer contracts and making sure there are no barriers to this type of coverage, making sure doctors are trained in how to appropriately use the technology. Encryption, you see compliance officers now talking about encryption and apps and projects that 2 years ago probably none of us knew about. And a lot more transparency with the patients and the providers. It's a little more complicated to initiate a telehealth relationship if you're doing it according to all the patient consent and provider and payer recommendations. It's not just, you know, you dial up the phone and start going. You have to reach out to the patient and they have to take the steps of signing consent, agreeing, yes, I'll be treated by telemedicine. Yes, I understand what it is. And an informed patient is a safer patient.
What do you find in your experience people's familiarity with the existence of telehealth is? I don't know of any apps or any telehealth that's available to me in a major city. Are you finding that the consumers of healthcare are less aware than the doctors, or is that an issue?
It's definitely an issue. I don't think anyone is aware. I think if you quiz me and said, name the top five that you recommend or suggest clients use or have seen clients use, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I found them by Googling. It's very prevalent. There's probably 10 or 15 vendors on site today who are offering some sort of telemedicine type app or coverage or forms or compliance. So no, nobody knows about it. No one can say, oh yes, this is the best app and this is what we use in our hospital, or no one I know. So we really are relying, reaching out to the vendors, the providers of these apps. Doctors ask me and say, I want to do telehealth, I don't know how, can I just use my smartphone? And yeah,
No.
Panicky thoughts there. Or there are some clinics which are actually sending tablets home with behavioral health patients and saying, well, I'll call you on this and it's really my clinic's email, so it should be safe, without realizing that perhaps that's not actually HIPAA compliant. It's the same problem people face when you try and say to outside sales for a health clinic or a health company or a lab, no, you can't email patient data, even if it's from your company email to someone at the company. That's not magically encrypted. It still can be hacked.
There are not encryption theories.
But people believe it will just work because they don't realize that when you see that HTTPS or whatever it is, when you're putting in your PayPal number, that means it's encrypted. They just say, well, I type in my bank and it's already safe. So why isn't my voice safe the same way? We'll have to get people a lot more conversant.
What resources do you use to keep yourself abreast on what's changing in the telehealth, telemedicine field, as well as how compliance applies to it?
I try to read everything I can. Every time a program like HCCA or anyone else, AHLA, does telemedicine webinars, seminars, I try and go or at least get the materials. it really still seems like a very small clique of people who are doing this. And so we all call each other a lot, because every week I get a question and I think, I have no idea. And I'll call Nate or call someone else who's working in this field and ask. The vendors are really your best source, weirdly. I guess they're highly motivated to figure out how it works. I know on our Kentucky State Telehealth Board, three vendors attend every meeting. And they give a lot of input. They're not on the board, but they'll sit and say, this is what we see in the industry. This is what HIPAA said about this case in our area. You really do have to rely on the vendors because it is so new. For compliance officers, read a lot. Get on all the lists for all the compliance organizations and download everything. It really is, you have to be self-taught. There's not really a certification in it. It's very easy to find addiction treatment. It's very easy to Google and find 1,000 papers on it. Telemedicine, it's probably 10. So they're very, very small number of resources out.
Wow. Well, hopefully we can build up the resource
pool. There you go.
And I was speaking with someone from HHS, OCR, today, and she was saying that they're actually working on putting together some guidance for the texting and social media aspects. So that's something we can look forward to, hopefully as a resource, some official regulatory guidance
in
how to do this. But how do you see the landscape changing or evolving in the next 5 years?
I am hopeful, and this could just be because I've seen so much movement in the states I'm working in, I am very hopeful that under whatever happens with national health care, particularly if states are given a lot more freedom to use their dollars the way they want to. Certainly the vendors have been very active, but also telehealth promoters have been speaking to state legislators for the last couple years and saying, let's really expand telehealth and what we do in terms of user experience, computer, patient, provider interaction, Teladoc and its big case on you can just dial up a doctor and get a diagnosis and a prescription. I would say 2 years from now, everyone will be able to name an app and say, oh yes, my doctor uses telemedicine. I think it's going to be very, very prevalent because it's a huge cost savings and it promotes patient care. And we need both those things desperately.
Absolutely, we do. Well, Anna, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule here at the Compliance Institute to chat with me about telehealth and telemedicine.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.